notes of you?
Stop.
What's this?
No, I have my list of things that I have to do today.
I just blacked them out. If you don't know about them, it's not
now,
official.
Are you a person, when you make a list, you have to have some easy things on there? So
oh, absolutely.
That, so that you can just cross it out.
Yes.
Record Done. Podcast. Yeah. It's right here on my list. Done.
It doesn't say record a good podcast.
Nope. Record a podcast.
Right. Details are important.
All right. Welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff with me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
You know, Patrick doesn't answer my question anymore. Every week I ask him how he's doing, and he just blows right past it.
Moves right on to me. Yeah.
I assume it's, you know... It's a question without an answer. You're not.
I don't ask
it's
perfunctory
rhetorical.
Questions. I yeah. ask questions out of deep care and concern for your soul, okay. for your well-being.
Do you want to get into this? You
know, I'd like to know
how am I doing?
I'd like to know how you're doing. I think our listeners deserve to know, how are you doing?
Good. I saw a meme the other day that it was like Waldo on like a therapist couch. He's like, nobody ever asks how's Waldo.
Aww. That's awesome. Yeah, I love that. Poor Waldo.
I know. Yes.
Oh, I miss Where's Waldo books.
Yeah.
Sophia's almost old enough for them.
Yeah. I remember as a kid going to the bookstore, just like sitting on the ground, like looking at a Where's Waldo book for, you know, 30 minutes.
Right.
And that was it.
You know, it felt like hours.
And then putting it back. Yeah. Like, yeah. I'm not buying this.
Yeah. I found Waldo.
Or I didn't after 30 minutes. Right.
Yeah. Either way.
And, this one is broken.
This is beyond me.
Waldo's not in this book.
This is the advanced Waldo.
Yeah. I looked in all these books. Waldo was not in any of them.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving is coming up.
I love Thanksgiving. Patrick is a notorious Thanksgiving hater.
Yeah, I am.
Are
it's overrated.
Wow.
See? I know, right?
That surprises me about you. Especially because I know what your family Thanksgivings are like, and they sound ballin'.
Family.
He doesn't like Thanksgiving food, which is why his current Thanksgiving meals are so great, because they go to other places that don't do normal Thanksgiving food.
Yeah,
so you don't like food is what you're saying.
I do like food. I love food.
Not good food.
Yeah.
Like Thanksgiving food. I will stand by the Thanksgiving meal is overrated.
You're overrated. I will
stand
by that.
That's probably true as well.
It's overrated. can't see my face. But.
It is definitely overrated. I think it's fine. It's a fine meal. There's a reason. Nobody in March is like, hey, you want to make a turkey? There's a reason for it.
I don't like the turkey, to be fair.
There's a reason. Like, tonight, nobody's like, let's cook up some stuffing. Let's bust out this.
You do like roast chicken and stuffings throughout the year sometime.
Nobody does that.
Lots of people do that.
Do you do it? No. Exactly.
I do mashed potatoes and sweet potatoes.
Yeah, that's a real thing. Mashed potatoes, mac and cheese, those sort of things. Green bean casserole is not somebody... Nobody's making that in the middle of summer.
Okay? Oh, I freaking love a green bean casserole.
Variations on green bean casserole all year long, for sure.
Yeah, like green beans.
Green bean casserole is the most preferred side dish of both Ohio and Texas. According to a meme that I saw on Facebook.
That's a separate conversation.
Right. So have you ever had a Thanksgiving meal fail? Let me ask you that. Anything come out poorly?
Yeah. I think, have I shared this on the podcast before?
No, we'll share it.
Well, so I was like in middle school, and this is when in Ohio you would put your turkey in the garage to thaw because it was cold, and it was like a refrigerator, right? Yep. So you could use your garage like an extra refrigerator. But it was super cold that year, and so the turkey didn't thaw. And so my parents were trying to cook a turkey, and it took like 3 hours longer because it was still basically frozen on the inside when it should have been done.
In the Great White North.
Yeah, in the Great White North of Ohio.
Yes. I'm sure people out there
are dire wolves walking around.
Has a Thanksgiving fail at some point, Elise? Any Thanksgiving fails?
Yes, it's not food related though.
Okay.
We caught my cat on fire on Thanksgiving, and he ran under the couch while he was playing.
Excellent.
Yeah,
it sounds like a scene from Christmas Vacation.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was very exciting for about 3 minutes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, let's see. I don't have any Thanksgiving meal fails. I think. One time I went home for Thanksgiving, it was just me and my mom, which was like, I want to go to this park nearby and go for a walk. And I'm like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
This walk was, from start to finish, it was a giant loop around Lost Maples Park near San Antonio, Texas, and it's like 7 miles long.
Fabulous.
And then halfway through this loop, there's an offshoot to add 2.5 miles to it.
Nice.
And we get to that point, I'm like, we're obviously not doing this. Because this is 7 miles long.
Yeah.
She's like, no, let's do this.
Yeah.
So we do this offshoot. It's like a little mini loop, comes right back, and then we finish. So we rocked almost 10 miles that day, drove home, and then we were going to order food, and my mom just like fell asleep.
Because she just walked 10 miles. Right. She's tired.
Yeah.
And so I went to Jack in the Box on Thanksgiving. So.
Yeah.
All right, I'm glad Jack in Box was available for you.
Me and a cop were the only two people in there. So. Nice. Eating Thanksgiving dinner. Yep. So,
does Jack in Box have a Thanksgiving special?
I got a number 3, the sourdough Jack.
I was gonna say if they do, you don't want it.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Don't get the turkey special from Jack in Box.
It's very special.
All right, so here's an article. Here's the most complicated part of Thanksgiving meals, undoubtedly the tricky turkey, especially if you want to deep fry that turkey, which is
very dangerous.
Very dangerous. Multiple people have burned down many things.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and establish we do not endorse the deep frying of the turkey without proper safety precautions.
Many people say it tastes better. I say it tastes.
It does taste real good.
The same.
When you have it done, well, it tastes really good. Honestly. And you get that crispy deep fried turkey skin. Mm. Oh, that's good stuff.
Again, the vast majority of the turkey is past the skin, so it's like. You get, like, the outside is fine, and then the inside tastes exactly the same as any other turkey.
That's not true. Patrick doesn't know what he's talking
about. Yeah, I mean, the only part of the turkey that anybody likes is the skin anyway. So.
Right. Also the turkey leg.
But also, I think it's frowned upon if you just eat the skin, just pretend.
Save me the skin.
Side issue, because of coronavirus, there's, like, a glut of turkeys in the United States economy right now.
They're going to take over.
Because, like, so all the...
go freeze one. Go cook it up in March.
All the Renaissance fairs were canceled. So, like, all the turkey legs were, like, there's a glut of that. And then people aren't buying turkeys because you're not getting together in big groups. So, like, I'm not going to cook a 13-pound turkey for four people, right? So,
or am I?
There's, like, it's an economic problem.
You're sidetracking me from my story here.
Because I'm telling you my own story.
He has his cadence down the way he wants to.
Exactly.
Don't interrupt.
Yeah. Yes,
thank you. All right. So, Whole Foods. Is offering turkey insurance this year.
Okay.
All right. So if you buy a turkey from Whole Foods and it goes bad,
and I screw it up,
you can file an insurance claim and get a $35 Whole Foods gift card if you commit
How
a turkey.
How much do I have to pay to get turkey insurance?
Well, you have to buy a turkey from the
Which
Whole Foods.
Which costs like $700 from Whole Foods.
Yeah. So yeah, that $35 at Whole Foods is not going very far.
Right.
Yeah. Then you have to submit a claim. You have to take a picture of your failed turkey and send in a story, and they'll determine if it failed or not. And they will give 1,000 customers a $35 gift card.
Wait, so not only do I have to fail, but I have to be one of like the worst 1,000 to fail? Like there's going to be so many million people... failing at turkeys on Thanksgiving.
Do you think a million people are buying their turkeys from Whole Foods?
I don't know. There's a lot of people.
Yeah. A lot of snoots in the world.
Sure. Yeah, so if you commit a turkey cooking fail, you can do this. They spot on because Thanksgiving might look a little differently this year. Maybe since your smaller families are just not going out to the big family gathering. So inexperienced turkey cookers might be given their first shot at cooking a turkey this
year. That's true. That might be happening.
So you want a little insurance in case the turkey goes bad.
Yeah.
In case you drop the turkey.
I
unfortunately have seen that there is cases of people dropping the turkey on pets, on their own feet.
Sure.
And it's
ouch.
Yes.
Frozen turkeys dropped on your feet or on your pets. Not a good scenario.
Sure.
Yes. Frankly, thawed turkeys, also not great, but at least there's some cushion there.
Yes. You have to submit a receipt, brief explanation, and a picture to say, my turkey failed.
Sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's more work
than just cooking the turkey.
And it has to be the day of. You have to be by that night at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
I also don't love this idea of having to prove, to
your
a
failure.
Committee that I'm dumb and incapable. Like,
right.
I just am.
I feel like in the amount of time it takes you to file this claim, you could have learned how to cook a turkey properly and probably saved a lot of effort here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just gone to Jack in the Box.
Or gone to Jack in the Box. Yeah. Gotten the turkey special.
That's right. Extra special for you.
Listeners, if you go to Jack in the Box, please let us know what happens if you order the turkey special.
Now, what if you do do you think there's people out there who are going to take advantage of this deal and maybe commit a little... turkey insurance fraud.
Absolutely, someone is going to try to commit turkey insurance fraud. But we live in America, the land of having something nice and ruining it immediately.
Yep.
So,
sure,
yes.
Sure. Yeah, so here's what you do. You go get your nice turkey from Whole Foods, your organic turkey there that costs, an arm and a leg. You cook that up real nice. Then you go down to, the Kroger and buy the crappiest, cheapest turkey you got. Fail that one.
Burn it down.
Burn that one. Yep. And then you submit that for your claim for your $35 Whole Foods gift card.
So this is now evidence against Patrick, right?
Yeah.
When he tries to file his claim, we're going to have to
want to eat turkey. Again, my family
but do you want a $35 gift card to Whole Foods?
Again, what is that going to get me?
A piece of broccoli?
I don't know.
Yeah, some generic, their version of generic cereals that are more expensive than the real cereals.
Something gluten-free.
Yes, like a homemade peanut butter that I get to make in store.
Ooh.
You know, that costs 10 times as much as Jif.
Yeah, because it's made in the store. You made it with your own hands. You can't put a price on the gift of making peanut butter with your own hands. Well, apparently you can, and it's sometimes more expensive than Jif. But
also nasty. I grew up on it.
So. On homemade peanut butter?
Sorry, Mom. I hated it.
Yeesh. Yeah. Truth coming out. Yeah. Like Mark Povich in here.
Yeah. On this, I'll give you a guess here. How many turkeys do you think are eaten over Thanksgiving holiday?
Like in the United States?
In the United States.
How many whole turkeys?
How many whole turkeys?
Not pounds of turkey, but whole individual turkeys.
Whole individual turkeys.
Let's see. There's 300 million people in the United States. I'm guessing...
About 330, yeah.
I don't know. 500,000 turkeys.
500,000 turkeys? What do you think, Elise?
I would guess more like millions of turkeys.
Okay. So, you're both way under 40 million turkeys.
That's a lot of turkeys. Yeah. You know, I did my math wrong on that. 300, yeah. I was
thinking like a turkey for every like three or four people.
Yeah, that would have been smarter. Yeah.
Yeah.
40 million, that's a lot.
That is a lot of turkeys. So.
And now there's a turkey glut.
And now there's a turkey
glut. Those 40 million turkeys have no.
Well, now there might be more because people are buying it's just you and your own individual family buying a turkey and cooking up. Maybe you don't want that.
They're saying people aren't buying a turkey because.
Like, they may be waiting. They were waiting for this this claim here.
We'll have to see what happens.
They were pumping the brakes. It was like, is there insurance? My turkey goes wrong. Okay. There you go. Thanksgiving news.
Yeah. If any of you are waiting for turkey insurance before you buy your turkey, I think maybe you just need to cook a ham instead.
Maybe just get Chinese food.
Yeah.
That's what I would do anyway. So yeah. if it was up to me, that's what we're eating for Thanksgiving.
Yeah. I'd cook a nice lasagna for Thanksgiving. That sounds delightful.
I will gladly order takeout.
We live right up the street.
Sure.
Just reminding you. Yeah, for your lasagna.
I'll lay some lasagna out on your porch for you.
You know I'm not cooking this year or any year.
Yeah. All right, so we have an article here.
Sounded like a loaded comment, but we'll unpack that later. That's
Michael.
We have an article here from our friends at Relevant.
All right.
Yeah. Yay.
They pump out some content. They're almost like an online magazine that puts out multiple articles. Like
it's crazy. Who knew?
Yeah, we're talking, we've been talking a lot about some current events over the last couple of weeks, months over what's going on in our nation for election season.
Mm-hmm. Oof. Anybody else tired?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm tired.
And probably some contention that certainly at time of recording is not settled. But at time of release, I doubt it as well. So about the election still.
Last week, we didn't know who had won. This week, some of us don't know who has won. I don't know a nice way to say that. Some people are still contesting this election, I guess would be the best way to say that. Yeah.
Yeah. There's still contestant over contestion.
Contention?
Contention.
Congestion.
Whatever. Congestion. Conjunctions.
There's digestion. That's it. Digestion.
We're digesting this election.
Yes, we are. Yeah. Very slowly and uncomfortably.
We have some indigestion from this one.
Yes. We should have gotten election insurance. If this election gives you indigestion, here's $35. I could get behind that.
Yeah.
So the media has called it for Joe Biden. Still up in the air what happens with the Trump courts. Campaign and court system over the next couple months, it seems. But we're taking a break from that.
Yep.
We don't want to talk about that anymore.
I'm done.
At least for the time being.
I'm good. But I don't,
Moved on.
So we're going to talk a little bit about this article here.
Ooh.
About followship.
Ooh, I see what he did there. Yes, he put it in a little different vowel.
Followship. The art of following.
All right. Mm-hmm. Followship.
Yes. So this is called The Art of Following. I'll give you the lead here.
I got to ask a question.
Yes.
Did you come up with followship or is that something from the article?
I came up with it.
Look at you go. You're so proud of yourself.
Where in the Bible does it say God commands us as Christians to be leaders? When Jesus called his disciples, he didn't tell them lead others. He told them follow me. That's our introduction here to the article. So this article, a couple weeks old, but we wanted to come back to it as a little bit about just the how to be a follower in Christ.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you a question. When you think about like books or sermons or conferences or whatever it is about, Christianity, do you hear often how to be a good follower or often how to be a good leader?
I think that my current context has perhaps tainted my view of this question. I think that because I'm in a position of church leadership, I think I hear and read a lot more about how to be a leader within the context of faith. prior to that, though, yeah, like high school, college, even seminary, it was always about following.
Yeah.
From my perspective, yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking when I was reading this article that most of the thoughts that I were having that I was having about it were actually geared towards like leadership.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, that's some irony. And also the irony that the three of us are all on church leadership at,
right.
in some
yeah,
form
sure.
or fashion
right.
Discussing followership. I think that particularly in the West, I think that it's skewed towards leadership.
I think so too. I mean, like, I think I never took a biblical followership class at college. Those things weren't offered as tracks. Every conference I ever went to, following was never a major theme or topic of how to be a good follower. You know, since I, you know, intentionally kind of chose a church career path that was not the high seat,
yeah.
you know, there were some books and classes I took of like leading from the second chair or the third chair at your church and what that looks like. But oftentimes, I always felt like whenever we address Christianity, it's always come from this context of being a leader in your community, a leader
in your
family, a leader in your school. That's what kind of like being a Christian is. It's very closely tied to being a leader.
Yeah.
I think as women, we hear more about following than leading, though. I think it's, skewed Western leadership and also skewed male leadership.
Sure. And I think it probably also comes, I mean, Alicia kind of mentioned you have more of a background from evangelical versus mainline side of the world.
Have I mentioned that here?
Yes. Yes. So, yeah. So for them, I think probably their theology would kind of push women more into the second chair or the following role.
I think it's still a cultural thing too, though. Yeah. I want to be careful not to say that it's just like an evangelical thing or just a religious thing too. I think it's still very much culturally ingrained.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
I could see that. Yeah. So for me, following is something that's like, okay, I don't really necessarily hear this a lot, you know, and I don't know if you can say, like, I preach all the time about how to be a good follower, you know?
I think I preach all the time about how to follow Jesus.
Sure.
I do think I do that. I don't know that I preach all the time about how to be a good follower.
Yeah.
Because I think that I equate following Jesus with being a leader. So, you know, by following Jesus, and maybe that's where some of this conversation is going. I think that's an equation that I make. So I think I would say that I preach about following Jesus. I don't think that I would say I preach about being a follower.
Yeah.
Which maybe is an inappropriate distinction, but I think it's a helpful one.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So, and I think this is an interesting article. I think it raises an interesting idea. I'm going to say I don't think it takes it far enough.
Great. Let's break the boundaries.
I don't think it really... capsulate some of the points I think the author is trying to make. And I have a confession here. I just looked down and at my notes here, and it does call this followership.
It was so deeply ingrained
that you didn't even realize.
But I said followership, and they said followership.
Right.
So.
Followership is more clever.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I think they're not going to. I think I can beat this in a court case. Came up with. Or I said followership. Mm-hmm. Yes. What they're saying is different. All right. So.
Do you have evidence to support your court case?
Turkey insurance.
Doesn't matter.
Okay. Hurricane insurance?
Turkey insurance. Oh, turkey insurance. Hurricane insurance. Yeah.
That's a real thing.
Yeah. Hey, they're both real things. Okay. Yeah. All right. They're going to say here, following the leader may seem like an easy as the children's game, but that's not always the case. It's easier to follow someone else to do the thinking and heavy lifting and just tag along mindlessly behind, but that is not good followership. That's just laziness.
Oh,
all right. Okay. So let me start here. So what do you think of, what do you think would make a good follower? If you're thinking of like, okay, the lost art or forgotten art of being a good follower, what would be a good follower? How would you become one?
Mm-hmm. So in my head, I'm picturing our preschool classes that walk through our hallways on a pretty regular basis. And especially younger ones are learning how to follow the leader, right? Yes. You know, they're trying to understand like, okay, there is someone in front of me behind whom my body is supposed to stay. And the ones who are doing it well, right, their eyes are forward, they're focused on the person in front of them, they're not distracted by bumblebees or flowers or whatever else. Mm-hmm. And the ones who are not following well are looking all around and running into their friends or wandering off to the side. And so I think we can translate that into, well, what makes a good follower? Well, it's someone who's focused on the person who's leading and is willingly putting their attention and their focus on the person who is leading them.
Yeah.
So that they're not distracted or caught off guard by the other things that are coming. They're putting their trust in some ways. They're putting their trust in the leader to follow that.
I was going to say something similar. Not, I wasn't thinking quite that deep on it, but I was thinking somebody who's engaged in the process and what's happening.
Yeah, I think those are good things. I think, you know, we want to look for other adjectives here. You know, supportive, that they are. Yeah, and I think engaged is a really good way to think about that, at least. When I think of, like, who, you know, if you think about a movie with, like, there's a general or a leader or whatever that person is, and the team around them, the best team members are engaged in what's going on. That they're not, you know, diverting attention away from the leader. They're not kind of off doing their own thing. They're not rebelling at every command or request of this leader. But that also doesn't mean that they're just submissive.
I think, too, as a leader, you're only as good as the people that follow you, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think that you want just, like, brainless following. I think that you want a lot more, like, active qualities, too.
Because a leader with no followers is just a person taking a walk.
Right. Sure.
Can we get that on a t-shirt?
I don't think you came up with that.
I did not. It's a quote from a show.
Yeah, she's been sitting on that one.
Only for, like, the last 30 seconds, but, yeah. No, I'm thinking, you know, we've all been in, like, in teams or meetings or situations where people are not following in a helpful way. And I'm still on the preschool distracted running into a door, right? And, you know, so you're sitting in the PTA meeting and the leader is trying to lead a conversation about X, and, I don't know, Billy Q over in the corner keeps coming back to the book sale from last year, and no one else is talking about the book sale. That's not the point of the meeting, but that's what their, you know, their attention is somewhere else. They're not participating in the process. They're not cooperating with the vision because they have their own agenda. And so they're distracted, and they're, you know, the preschooler running into a door, as opposed to those who are kind of focused on, we all want to go in the same direction. And so we want to work together to move us in the same direction. And I think that's a piece of being a follower, is consenting to the leader is going somewhere I want to go.
Yeah.
And I want to be a part of going.
Yeah. Well, I think even if you're not disruptive, if you're not participating, then you're still not adding anything to that process.
Yeah. I think all these things kind of give us a good definition of what it means to be a good follower. Engaged, you're part of the process, you're trusting, you're doing all these things. And I think also attached to that is the followers act as kind of, can be a compass to the leader themselves as well. A reminder of, this is the goals. These are the things that we were told that we're going. You know, a bad follower and a bad leader would just wander aimlessly and the followers follow really well.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a good follower in that situation. If the leader is lost and the followers are like, well, we trust this guy, you know, or just trust this woman, that's not really being a good follower. You know, that's being, you know, a good submissive person, but that's not what I think the best followers out there could be. All right, so let me ask you this. Do you think it's easy for you to be a follower or leader in a certain situation? If you're like, hey, here's this committee, here's this group, here's this situation, where do you find yourself? Easy to say, like, you know what, I'm more than fine lifting up somebody else, or I really like taking the reins and kind of being that point person?
Seems like Elise has something she wants to say.
Yes, Elise's chomping at the bit.
I don't
even
want to say it. No, I have, like, deeply ingrained issues with authority, I think. So
okay.
This is a character failing. I do not react well to people telling me what I should or should not do definitively.
We can have some fun with this.
Right. It is much more my comfort zone to be in charge of things. On the flip side of that, I do want to say, just, this is probably not a well-formed thought either, but one of the things that I've kind of learned in that process of actually being on leadership is that it's only effective. Like, you're only effective as a leader if you view it as aside from your ego. Mm-hmm. It's not about you as a leader. I've tried to keep in mind that, you know, when you are on leadership, you're sort of tasked with making decisions for people that do not agree with you.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not so much about how you feel or what you think should happen. It's about what's good for everybody else.
You know, I think when I'm in functions outside of a pastoral position, so not at the church, just, you know, at a meeting for a school or something like that in the community, I think it's pretty easy for me to kind of slide into, okay, I'm going to let somebody else take the reins on this. And I think in part it's because by nature of the position at a church, any room that I walk into, there's an inherent sense of leadership that comes with. And that's both a blessing and a curse, right?
Sure.
Depending on the scenario, because some people have a real problem with that authority. And so I'm motioning to Elise not to say that she has a problem, but just to...
Oh, I do.
Right. I wasn't going to bring it up. But no, I mean, some people, you know, I walk in and that's an instant, you know, like, oh, that authority's here and I'm, you know, on edge now. But some people, that's a real comfort. You know, I don't say anything. I'm just in the room and they're like, okay. The pastor is here. It's going to be okay. All right. I mean, that's how some people feel about it. So I have to walk a pretty fine line and have to figure that out kind of in every room that I walk into, how hard I have to verbally pull on the reins, because just by being in the room,
there's
a sense of sometimes people wanting to give me the reins and sometimes people wanting to take reins that I never wanted to have. So
sure. Yeah. I think, you know, for me personally, let's see, you know, we've taken a lot of like personality tests as a staff, and I know who I am fairly well. And you know,
golden retriever.
No, I have taken, you know, those animal tests, but I'm not a golden retriever.
What animal were you?
Oh, I do want to know.
I'm an otter.
Hey, so. An otter. Yes. So you just want to have fun all the time, and
pretty much.
Yeah, that's cool.
No, but so I know in a lot of these, like, I can be really, really good at thinking, of dreaming, of problem solving, and not so great at the doing and the actual nuts and bolts of doing those things. So sometimes it's easy for me to be like, I really want to take the reins and think this through and dream it out. But when it kind of, the rubber meets the road, I'm kind of like, I'm bored with this. Let's move on to something else. Let's. Mm-hmm. I like to think the problems. I don't like to do the problems, you know, so much. And so, you know, in reality, you know, working kind of in a second chair at a church or in committees or leadership is really good for me. It's really like where I fit in best, is in those things. Cause I'm really good at kind of that thinking, but just not very good at the doing as much.
Yeah.
So.
What I think happens, and this is not speaking to you directly, so I don't, but I think what happens sometimes when there's somebody with that sort of skill set is that somebody who is the clear leader and sees someone stepping in with those sorts of visions and offerings from a second or third chair, they sometimes interpret that as a threat.
Yeah.
And so I think one of the keys to being a good leader is lifting up those skills and those gifts without perceiving it as a threat to your ability to lead that team. Because you have to trust that you're in that position of leadership to bring your own gifts and skills to that team.
Yeah.
And you have to be willing to work with all of the skills and gifts that are in the room and honor those each in their own way without feeling that like a threat on your idea or your identity or your plan or whatever that might be.
Yeah.
But we're talking about leadership now, because even in our conversation about following, we're getting caught up in how to be a better leader.
I said, because I think part of, like, at least you know this, part of being me in the West, maybe, and things like this, like, if you were, like, in a committee or meeting, and somebody's like, you know what, you're a really good follower.
You'd be like, excuse you.
Oh, what?
Yeah. Settle this outside.
I'm a what now? Yeah. But if somebody said, you're a really good leader, oh that's a compliment.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
But you're a really good follower is like,
you
okay.
Your mama with that
yeah, yeah. That's an insult already.
Yeah. That's a great point.
That comes at me. And I think part of that is like when we have grown up, you know, watching media and engaging in stuff, like identifying with, well, leaders and main characters.
Yeah.
Like I watch Star Wars and you don't think, you know who I really want to be? Wedge Antilles, the other pilot who storms the Death Star. I want to be Luke Skywalker. You know, exactly.
I don't want to be Wedge Antilles either. Yeah.
Unnamed X-Wing pilot.
Yes, exactly. Because you want to be the guy that's helping, you know, Luke. And you know, you don't want to be Luke Skywalker. That's who you think, that's who I'd like to be.
Well, I mean, I think you center yourself in your own narrative, too. You know, like, you're always the protagonist of your own stories. So.
Yeah.
I think we have
because the other protagonists are lame.
Yeah. Well, I think we have a strong reaction, too, to somebody basically saying, you're not the protagonist in my story, either. You know, like, it's an instant, like, ego response to it.
Yeah. Yeah, in this game of life, you are kind of the character that gives the quest and not the character that goes on the quest. You're like, that's not really who I want to be.
I want to be the Oracle.
That's not how I envision my life going. So, so when we hear you're a really great follower, it's easy to be like, that seems insulting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because that means I'm not taking my life into my own hands.
Yeah.
Or I'm not the main character in my own life.
Mm-hmm.
But I think even the best leaders, especially in the church, would have an aspect of, I am not the main character, even in my own life, to them.
Yeah.
Because that should be Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think in reality, we talk about leadership here. The best leaders should be modeling how to be the best followers of Jesus.
Yeah.
And not just how to be the most charismatic or how to be the best doers and I work 18 hours a day, or how to be the best convincers, or how to be the best organized. It has to be, I'm the best follower of Jesus I can be, and that's guiding people to be the best followers in their world, in their realms.
I'm feeling a little convicted. Yeah, I feel like that was directed at me.
Yeah.
Was that? Was that a little side eye that I just got there?
I'm the one who admitted that I can't follow worth a toot, so.
Sure, yeah. Yes. I'm me too, so I mean, I like to.
We're both otters.
Both otters, yeah. Oh, like to play.
Surrounded by otters.
Yeah. What are you?
Playful and fun.
But I don't want to be surrounded by otters.
A little bit of contrarians and, a little bit of rebels to us as well. I don't to follow the rules.
Yeah, like, to be fair, I don't want the reins. You don't tell me what to do with my reins very much.
Yeah.
I don't want to be in the charge, but I don't want you to be in charge of me.
Right. Yeah. So I think when it comes to like being a follower in church, the best followers in church are not necessarily best supporters of their senior pastor, of their committee member, of whoever the congregation president. The best followers in church, I think, are the best at following Jesus, and that translates into being a quality follower of the senior pastor, committee member, church council
because president. Ideally, those senior pastors, committee members, council presidents are also good followers of Jesus, right?
Yeah.
And so if you have a good follower of Jesus following a good follower of Jesus, that will equate. But a good follower of Jesus who sees someone in a position of leadership who is not acting in a way of a good follower of Jesus will be perceived as a bad follower.
Yes.
Even though they're following Jesus well, because they'll be pointing out, like, this isn't following Jesus. This isn't what we should be about. And so they'll be perceived as, you know, an antagonizer or as a rabble-rouser or troublemaker, whatever that might be. Do we use rabble-rouser? Is that something people say?
I understand it from my historical fantasy that I write.
Oh, cool. All right. So historically, in fantasy worlds.
I've told you before, you're the oldest millennial. Yeah.
And apparently living in fantasy worlds. Yeah. It's fine. But either way, like, you know, they will be perceived. If I'm following Jesus... Yeah. Underneath leadership who is not following Jesus, I will be perceived as trouble.
Yeah, and I think that could be kind of the hard, you know, in any situation like that, that can be kind of the hard waters to navigate. Because if you're a good follower and you're like, I'm following Jesus, and I think our church, our committee, what our direction right now is not aligned with Jesus, you seem to be kind of a contrarian. Mm-hmm. Who's this squeaky wheel over here? Who's, you know,
contrarian, old man word. Come on.
who's mucking up the works here. But also there's plenty of people who claim that they're following Jesus and are all those things.
Right.
And just they're using that as kind of the weapon to be a contrarian, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's kind of difficult, I think, for a lot of people. But I think, you know, a good follower would, when they raise those questions, in many ways they have earned the right to raise those questions by demonstrating followership of Jesus in their lives.
Yeah.
By saying, like, I am known for how I follow my God. And this means what I have to say has weight.
Yeah.
But if you're complaining about everything, about what the coffee is,
right,
if you're complaining about how often we stand in church, if you're complaining about the time this happened or what this worship thing looked like, maybe you're not. Maybe that's not like you're following Jesus. Maybe you're just mad at something.
Yeah. But I think even that, right, the authority for that good follower to speak on those issues comes from people who are also following Jesus and can recognize that, right? And so if that good follower is underneath leadership that is not, then that leadership will perceive that as antagonistic because they're not centered on Jesus.
Yeah.
I think, you know, leadership ultimately is way more of a responsibility than it is a privilege. You know, we sort of idolize it, but it's, I mean... Talk about answering for stuff, you know?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. You know, like, you know, we have worship here every Sunday. And as a pastor, I lead worship, right? That's my job, is to be up in front. And, you know, there's a tacit agreement between the congregation and me that we're going to get from the beginning to the end, and we're all going to get through it together. And whatever's going to happen is going to happen. But if I rule that worship service with an iron fist, assuming that it's all about me, then it's going to fail. I'm going to be frustrated by any little thing that comes up. You know, any person that comes up and says, oh, we need to talk about this right now, or oh, you need to make this announcement, or oh, this reading needs to, like, that's going to be a problem for me because it's, you know, damaging my, but if I get out of the way and I'm saying, look, my leadership of this worship service is because I'm following Jesus and to help you follow Jesus more closely, then all of those other things that happen, I can trust are a part of allowing people to follow Jesus.
Yeah.
And you, it changes your perspective on how we enter into that space and time together, because I don't want people to see me at worship. I want people to see Jesus by the communal experience of worshiping together.
I think what's neat about us talking about this topic for our context right now is our congregation just said goodbye to a senior pastor, to a central leader within our congregation and our staff. And we just had a senior pastor retire. And that's a great thing. And now we're kind of in the midst of what is next. Who will have an interim pastor. Maybe you would say best case scenario is next year at this time we have a new senior pastor. You know, so maybe around a year is kind of, that would be ideal. Could be longer. Could be, you know, a long thing. And there's many churches out there who have had that central leader retire or move and their church collapses. Because those followers were not following Jesus. They were following the charisma and the passion of a central figure that was not Jesus.
Cults of personality.
And then nothing, and then it couldn't be sustained. And my hope, you know, here at Lord of Life is in this next year or plus, we continue on in many, many ways, just as we did before. And that isn't a testament that our past leadership was ineffective or not quality. It just is a testament that we as a congregation are looking at Jesus more than any one person. And I think that that would be the greatest testament to any retiring leader, wherever your position is, the mission continues without you at the helm. That does, you don't need to be behind the wheel for the car to keep going.
If you're driving, please stay behind the wheel.
Well, because, you know,
theoretically.
Well, they're saying somebody new takes that position or slides into these spots or these vacuums of leadership.
Please don't switch drivers while your car is
driving. You know, I'm just saying, if you do it really good, it's good.
He does not speak for this congregation.
It's an analogy, okay?
Oh my gosh.
When you inevitably get in an accident because you were listening to Patrick, please send all of your concerns to Pete Nazaroff.
I will gladly provide turkey insurance for you for your car accident. If your turkey is damaged, I'll buy a new one. But I do think that kind of is the best congregational following is that it's not dependent on who is your church council president, or who is your senior pastor, or who is your children's director or youth director, or blank position that is the leader in charge of blank, that it is dependent on Jesus. And I think that's the best following we can do.
Word.
All right.
Let's go follow Jesus.
Follow.
All right. Hey, if you liked what you heard today, don't just follow us. Lead some of your friends to this podcast. We would love if you took the time to share, rate and review this. It does help us out. Lets us know what you're thinking. In fact, I forgot to bring it today. I apologize. We had a comment on our website, and so I will get that for us for next week. I'll bring that in as a little listener review from a podcast in the previous episode. But be sure to check us out wherever fine podcasts are available. And you can, of course, reach out to us directly at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com.
That's true. We're there.
This portion of the podcast brought to you by Google. We own everything.
Sure. Look, might as well leave it. Because it's happening.
At Google, we already run your life.
Yeah, it's like whenever you talk about something and all of a sudden you open up your phone and you get ads for that thing. We all know they're listening.
Exactly.
At least might as well give me, start advertising things I want.
That's right.
You know, versus selling my secrets to the Chinese.
Joke's on them for having to listen to me lip sync to Hanson all the time.
The Google employee's like, oh my gosh.
Again? This is sad.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.